None, Tyrion said. Yet it is expected of you. Your absence has been noted. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community. This is Season 10 of the White Book Podcast. That is a quote. I debated about leaving off the none, but I figured, you know, that just really adds a lot of impact to that line, right?
Mm-hmm. It does.
Yeah. I like to have something topical for the quotes. I didn't expect to stumble onto something so pointed so quickly here. It was the second quote when I searched for the word expected, but it made me laugh, so I went with it anyway.
I mean, laughter is the best medicine, I hear. So, you know, it's a thing.
That's true. That is definitely a thing. So, on that front, we're going to have a little bit of a different episode 374 than originally expected. I know several listeners have been begging for a melee episode for a while now, but we find ourselves tabling it yet again, because, frankly, what would a melee episode be without the reigning world champion and first player of melee, Jesse Carpenter?
It's true. Jesse had a hell of a melee year last year, so, you know, we got to make sure that we respect him as probably, I won't even say probably at this point, the best melee player of the world in the world, or at least one of the best melee players in the world, so.
Yeah, maybe the best currently playing melee player. Is that maybe a reasonable
assumption?
That's
at least the best in North America.
Yeah, there we go. So we would be remiss to try and tackle that topic without his help. So we're tabling that again, and we're going to feature, let's call it a potpourri episode this week with a few segments and different people and things. But we're going to bookend with myself and Roy so that you have some friendly grounding so you're not completely lost this week.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, in that case then, how about I hit a little bit with Roy? We've been doing a lot of kind of community related type stuff lately, and something that I thought might be worthwhile to come back around to and chat a little bit are the tournament circuits that have sprung up over the last couple years. Is it just two now?
It's three, or was I believe.
It three. Okay.
Well, excuse me. There's four. There's of course the OG tournament circuit of unofficial organized play, which is of course the Road to Stalik. All of us are basing ourselves upon the amazing success of our European brethren here in North America, and they're the OG. You just can't beat the Road to Stalik in the level of sort of high level of competition, but also friendliness of events. So we want to make sure that we shout them out and make sure that they are given the full credit they deserve for being the OG. But in North America, there are three currently, as I understand it. There is the Northeast Championship Tour, the Midwest Circuit, and I believe the West Coast Circuit. Let me just double check to make sure. The Western yeah. Championship Circuit, excuse me, is what it's called, the WCC. Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
There we go.
So those are the three. When this episode airs, it's going to be close to like 3 weeks after the Midwest Circuit wrapped up its first year. So congratulations to CT, who was the really big organizer of that, sort of the spearhead of that. You know, they had a year of sort of like figuring things out there, but CT pulled it off. Apparently, the Midwest Circuit Championship, which was won by Alex Tonic, so congratulations to Alex, was big. I mean, they had 31 people there at their championship. They played at a brewery. You know, it's a huge success for them, and I'm really happy for them. And of course, this is also the first year for California. Kubla is, I know this quite well, you know, under 2 months away now, because KublaCon is the same day as my wedding, so it's very easy to track when KublaCon is this year. So, you know, Sid and all the folks in the West have been chugging away, and they've had sort of they've been no drama Obama with their circuit as well. So they've really just been chugging along well, and KublaCon is right around the corner. So big success out here. And then, of course, here we're entering the second year of – well, not entering. We've entered the second year of the Northeast Championship Tour. We've added two new events this year. Sadly, we retired our event in Southern Massachusetts / Rhode Island and added a Connecticut and a North Jersey stop. By the time you all listen to this, which should be, what, the second week in April, right? The 12th?
When this episode will release? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
The second week in April. That means it's 2 weeks until the 27th, which one of our new events hosted by Chris Vack, which is Trial by Combat, will be in Northern Jersey. I'll be there. It's the last big tournament I'll probably be attending until maybe Worlds. So I'm really excited for that event. The Northeast Championship Tour has been a big success. So far before Vax's event, we've had two. We've had Winds of Winter, which was kicked off in Boston. And then we, of course, had Storming of Starpike just outside of Philadelphia. So we've had a big year, big success last year. And yeah, that's where we are right now.
I mean, I think it's been a great setup so far. If I might, though, I might pick your brain on a few topics that folks could be interested in. And the first one of these questions, I don't mean to be too pointed about or throw anybody under the bus, but I think it is kind of an interesting consideration as far as you did wind up having to drop an event from the circuit, as you said, or the tour, rather, in the Northeast. And so I'm a little bit curious what sort of you know, considerations that came down to. Was it local player base was no longer large enough? Was it a problem in trying to find someone to run it? Venue? What's
up? I think it's simply that the player who organized the event last year stepped away from the game. And he was willing to actually do the event again because he loved the Northeast Championship Tour. He loves the community, but, you know, he wasn't playing as much. But he's, you know, and we're like, no, we have people who came up through the tour. New Jersey was thirsty for a second event because, as I said in our sort of meta overview in the Northeast, New Jersey sort of has the most players in our region, sort of just per capita. I mean, maybe just in raw numbers as well. And so they were thirsty for a second event in New Jersey. And then we also wanted to add our reigning champion, Mike Arroyo. We wanted to add an event in Connecticut as well. So it just sort of worked out. It was basically like, look, you can step away from this and we're not losing anything because Jersey wants a second event. We've got this Connecticut event that we want. And it just sort of filled in the gaps naturally. So it wasn't like a big dramatic thing of like, oh, no, I don't want to do this anymore. It was just simply like one player was transitioning to a different position in the game and we were able to get a couple people to step up, replace him with not just one but two events. And so it was just, you know, really just a natural evolution, because we also wanted to add an extra event anyway, because we wanted 8 faction cards to just naturally flow to the events instead of 7 events and then Red Saturday as the championship. We wanted 8 events and then a 9th event with Red Saturday as the championship. We were able to pull that off this year. So Okay. Very exciting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I didn't mean it as any sort of assumption that there was drama involved in the decision, but more just for some insight on people kind of behind the scenes running these events and kind of having to make some determinations and weigh whether the situation warrants it. So that's all.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's definitely true. I mean, but it was just very natural. So, I mean, that you know, just sort of like where different people were in their place in the game. So it wasn't, you know, like none of this event didn't meet our expectations, which was actually quite the opposite. Almost every all the events at the Northeast Championship last year exceeded our expectations. And so we were really happy with just sort of everything. So we were just looking to add, and this opportunity came up, and we were able to sort of fulfill everybody's needs.
Well, speaking of adding, I guess I've got 2 kind of lines of thought there, but we'll start with the total events, which is, you know, you said you brought it up to 8 for the stops and then 9 for the championship event. Do you feel that is probably kind of the natural max on a circuit of this style? I mean, obviously it matches the faction cards nicely, as you said, but you know, is it that you're going to stop there, or do you foresee it expanding even more in the future?
I mean, we're open to expanding it. I mean, we've sort of reached the point where every major meta north of the Potomac has their own, at least one event. So, you know, Boston has an event, Connecticut has an event, New Hampshire has an event, Jersey has 2 events, Maryland has an event, Philly has an event. So, you know, sort of all the different communities are serviced. So we aren't necessarily like really in need of an extra event. But if it came up, we could definitely add an additional one. It would sort of make us rethink sort of the naturalness of sort of, you know, 8 events plus the championship. You know, we like the house cards and that kind of thing.
Right.
When we were starting this, the goal was to have those 7 events because we wanted to do a set of house cards, and just sort of we felt like 7 to 8 is about the right amount of events, because, you know, you want to, the thing about these kind of circuits that you can run into is like you want to run the right thing where the circuit feels like it's constantly running without burnout, and without like overshadowing FFG OP or overshadowing the big events. So, you know, like we don't have an event in October because we do Thronestoberfest, which is not a NECT event, even though it is sort of sponsored through NECT. You know, we use the NECT Facebook page and stuff, but it's not like part of the tour. We take that month off. We take December off. We take January off. Last year we took January. So there was February, March for Stormy Starpike, April for Tom's event, and then we took May off, and then we had June, July, August, September. Yeah, that's how it went. I had to think about the calendar. We took a month off sort of in the summer there to sort of give people some regional breathing room and things like that. So, but we want to try to avoid sort of different events stepping on each other. So there's a lot of things to balance, but I think like naturally a tour, you know, that's so concentrated like ours is, you know, in a like 8-hour, I think it's roughly 8 hours to Boston from DC. So sort of this 8-hour, you know, space, you know, driving space, you know, we don't have a continent like Stalik does. Right. So, you know, Stalik doesn't really overextend itself to add 2 more events in Eastern Europe that, you know, people that live in the UK or people that live in the Netherlands can't necessarily make it to Estonia or can't make it to Hungary, you know, because it's a decent distance for them. or it could be too expensive or whatever, or Greece or what have you, where they add events. But for us, you know, if we add additional events, that, that can step on the toes of other ones. So we want to make sure that we balance it. So roughly around between 7 to 9 events is where we shoot.
Okay. So yeah, right around that particular area. The other thought I had as far as kind of expansion is, you know, you have had a couple of events you said already this year. How has attendance been compared to year one?
Attendance has been down a little bit. I think some of that has to do with our initial events were during the card drought.
Yeah.
And then we, you know, I talk so much about, excuse me, about stepping on each other, but we had the great problem of Winds of Winter and Stardom Startbike having to be back-to-back weekends just because of a bunch of logistical stuff with St. Patrick's Day in Philadelphia being a very big deal and just sort of how things worked out in Boston this past year. So that kind of also hurt the attendance of both of them. That I think was a little bit of a fluke, but both tournaments ended up being pretty sizable. We were happy with the attendance, but they were definitely down from last year. I would bet that Chris Fack's event at the end of the month in April, Trail by Combat, again, it's the 27th of April, will have probably the highest attendance of any NECT event so far. I would imagine that we see that going forward, that sort of attendance goes up throughout the year. Yeah, because, you know, the spring and summer, at least in the Northeast, tends to be the highest time of attendance in events.
Yeah.
For us, usually probably like floating around March-ish, depending on what the card pool's like, to about August or September, tend to be the biggest turnout for us. That's the real competitive season. I don't know what it's like in the Midwest, Will, but it's definitely it is for us.
No, I think that that's probably very similar in the Midwest as well. I think, you know, if nothing else, people want to get out and do exciting things a lot more in those warm, sunny months, I think. So, and as you said, the card drought very likely hurt attendance on events across the board.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, like weirdly, like July tends to be one of as a tournament organizer, traditionally, just like July is a garbage month for tournaments. And, you know, we were able to keep attendance pretty solid at our July event, but that's sort of where we've been in the past. Because, you know, a lot of like the highly competitive players are preparing for Gen Con and don't necessarily want to spend money to travel to an event. And then, you know, of course, July tends to be the big month for everybody to take off work. You know, and with the 4th of July weekend, it tends to be really bad. But the card drought, yeah, I think it's really hit attendance across the board. And you really do see that. And I think it's one of the reasons why you also see Jesse's event, which is the weekend that we're recording this, has such a huge turnout. I don't think it's just because of Jesse, although I'd say that's maybe 75% of why people signed up for it. The other 25% is that it's like a chance to play in a big event with all these new cards. And I think people are excited for the game to get started up again.
Yeah, I think there's definitely that. And the, you know, any of these alternate formats, I think really jazzes up people's interest when kind of standard constructed Joust has felt kind of stale for a few months. Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
Yeah, those work hand in hand. Well, I won't keep you too long on this since we said we were going to make these some shorter segments to hit on these. Any parting thoughts about future plans for the NECT or behind-the-scenes stuff that you think are worth hitting on?
You know, I think... NECT is going to keep chugging along. I'm excited to see how the year goes on. Just a couple quick things. I would expect in early summer to see initial announcements for Thronestoberfest. So probably in June or early July. There will be big announcements for that. After my wedding and after my honeymoon, I think you'll start seeing big announcements with that. And then, of course, this year is the 15th Red Saturday. Which makes us, again, the longest running tournament on the East Coast. And Sid and I argue about this all the time. The third longest running Thrones tournament after Kublai Khan and the World Championship itself. And I think New York has always hosted Red Saturday and San Francisco has always hosted Kublai Khan. So we're the two sort of events that have never moved. I'm really excited. We have some cool plans for Red Saturday 15. So, you know, mark your calendars. If you can find yourself in New York City over Thanksgiving weekend, you should really try really hard. I think we're going to have a great time. And I'm just really excited for the year. Like we have, and I said this in our sort of community building episode, that the Northeast is the best place to play Thrones. The great advantage of our circuit is that you see these fun, amazing faces, you know, once a month. And there's nothing quite like that anywhere else, that we have this steady flow of people that you can play competitive Thrones with and play top level Thrones, but also have a really good time with them at the same time. So it's just amazing. And we're really blessed here to have that community.
Oh, 100% agree. I'm very much looking forward, of course, to see how things go. I think it really wowed everybody in the States year one and kind of proved like, hey, wait a minute. Like we can do this type of thing that Europe has been doing for a while with the road to Stalag and obviously really inspired some folks. So I continue to expect a lot of good things.
Okay, guys, welcome back to another segment this week. This time, I've got a special guest with me who now I will remember has been on the show previously, thank goodness. Chris Thompson, who many of you know for a variety of reasons, often alt art card related reasons. And that actually even kind of connects to why he's on this week. We're chatting fan run circuits, and Chris is the point man and spearhead for the Midwest circuit. So let's chat a little bit. Where'd the inspiration come from? What was the specific thing that got you moving on that last year?
So last year, like I had talked a lot with Will and. Or not Will, sorry, you're Will. I talked a lot with Roy and you know, Roy had kind of started to lay out his whole East Coast circuit thing. And we just were like looking at ways that we could have more of a European feel to the States by having these kind of like circuits, these sort of road to events that sort of culminated and built up to other bigger events. And obviously with the US being so big and to a smaller extent, Canada being slightly involved with that, I guess, when they decided to come down here. We wanted to just try and kind of emulate that, but there's no way we could just do it in like one big one. So Roy kind of just like took up the East Coast, sort of encouraged us to look at doing something as well. And, you know, I, especially like once Jesse came around, I started traveling a lot more around the Midwest, and I was just like, you know what? We need to do this, even though the Midwest is basically the biggest and most unruly of the three. But
for sure,
I didn't want to wait a year. I was like, you know what? Let's throw together what we can. I hit up a lot of the big, you know, names for their regions to say, you know, let's try and do something and kind of connect it and theme it together. We worked on like the Wildling stuff and thought that was pretty cool. So we threw kind of a rough shot one together. I think it worked out pretty well for like a first year. And I had a lot of fun with a lot of the people who contributed. So we're looking at doing it again this year, kicking it off with Jesse's at the time of this recording, this weekend. So that should be a pretty good start. Biggest North American tournament US wise in a while, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, a long while. I forget now what the count was, but it was 100 plus, right?
Yeah, I think we're at like 115 or something like that.
Yeah, that's pretty rad. That's a great way to kick off year two of the Midwest Circuit. But to dial it backwards a little bit, to still focus on year one for just a little while, I'm curious a little bit about. Of course, it was a very kind of compressed time frame for planning, as you said, compared to some of the other stuff. You know, how short or fast was that time frame? You know, did you try to identify particular things that really had to be kind of the baseline? Like, these are the requirements to even call this a circuit. Let's try to get these knocked out in a short time frame. Like, what sort of stuff was on that docket?
The basic idea was hit up most of the major areas that had kind of decent sized metas, or at least have maybe a smaller meta, like Indy in particular. Like, we have a pretty small meta, but I try and stay like as involved enough in the community that maybe I can draw enough people to a big event. So I looked at kind of like who are the figureheads for their regions of the Midwest. And then just kind of looked at, do they already have a big event that's sort of a fan run event? The big focus was definitely kind of make all of the big fan run events for their areas sort of the stopping points in the past.
Gotcha. I know. So it kind of focused on, I mean, I'm going to use the word piggybacking, but I don't mean that in a derogative way, but like that it kind of focused on using existing stuff as infrastructure so you didn't have to build up new events and such.
Yeah, I think we were about 50-50 because we had, you know, like first player, crafters, sort of Minnesota has always kind of had its big September tournament every year. Its theme sort of changes and they change the name periodically, but you kind of always know that like FFG is going to shoot for a big community event in September. So we had a few kind of established ones. We knew Jesse's thing would become an annual tradition. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at kind of pushing some of the other newer people to kind of try and develop a new event that we might be able to build on later. So it was kind of a split half and half between like established existing events and kind of like trying to maybe put up some new ones. Like we tried getting Wausau to kind of stick their flag in the sand as well. But now that Jesse moved there, we just kind of like essentially moved Jesse's name to be in the Wausau event. So that kind of worked out. And then we brought in like the Windy City Cup, as well. So yeah, I mean,
yeah,
kind of like embrace the history of the game, but at the same time put out a couple new things out there. Like this coming year we're gonna have a big resurgence of the Ohio meta, trying to come up with something new.
Awesome.
They're working, Eric Goble and Natalia are working on kind of a, they haven't quite figured out what we'd do. We're still hammering out the last couple dates. But you know, Ohio's got like kind of a new fresh sort of meta to it, and they're really looking to kind of establish themselves with kind of a big event too. So we've got some fresh blood in there as well.
Yeah. I mean I think that's great to do to make sure you know, these sorts of events and circuits are encouraging new metas too, because you know, if we don't, the game is going to possibly slowly, but definitely eventually die. So I'm all for that.
One of the player base there, then we can at least still have some of these big tournaments.
Yeah. you acknowledge that the Midwest is the biggest and most unruly of the current regions. And, you know, like you said, you've got events spanning from Chicago to Wausau down to, you know, Indianapolis and Springfield. Like, it's a huge geographical area compared to everything else. You know, the other circuits are hovering what in the eight event realm, and Midwest was for the first year as well. Do you think that's feasible? You know, does that kind of seem to be the size everything settled on that's about right? Does the Midwest need to look at pushing larger? Do you think it might be a good idea to look at splitting the Midwest in the future? You know, how does all that play out?
I was gonna say that this year, like, we had eight last year. I was thinking 10 might be a good number when we kind of went into looking at it this year. Or if, like, you know, splitting with like maybe 5 and 5. In the end, I just thought it's more fun if we all just do it together rather than splitting it up. Yeah. And like last year, we had people who kind of struggled with theirs, and those people didn't come back this year. But we added in a couple new ones because I had already talked last year with Cameron up in Minnesota about joining, and, you know, we wanted to look at how we could get Kyle in with Wild Worlds and everything. And with us extending our schedule, it actually made it easier to include them, as well as getting the Windy City kind of set up as well. Because originally we were going to do a new Chicago tournament due to the scheduling conflicts, but with the extension we had, we were able to add in Windy City, which is great because it's always been a big tournament I liked. And I wanted to get Kyle involved as well after missing him last year, and getting Minnesota involved. Just people that you know, when you think of the Midwest, you think of like, oh, cool, I want to go to this guy's tournament. Like, people you know are going to put on quality events.
Right, right.
Rather than having
filling those in kind of helps with some of the geography too, I think, with ones you're mentioning. Mm-hmm. Like, because I feel like there were kind of gaps before, like just geographically, like, oh, it was a long way to get to the next event. And these additions kind of add something in an in-between or closer area to hopefully maybe encourage people to travel to one that maybe they didn't have one as close before.
Yeah. I lament not having the bonus of like every event being within like 4 or 5 hours of each other, but
yeah.
What the thing is like, yeah, right. We can't handle it. If the circuit is like a year long though, which it basically now is, you know, we're kicking off with Jesse's, and essentially we're going to run it all the way through March. So it's like that way people, if they do want to travel, don't feel like they're so crammed into trying to fit them all in within a certain time frame. If it's spaced out and there's like one every 6 to 8 weeks, then I think people can plan better. I think we'll get a lot better turnouts this year, even with the distance being a factor.
Would you say
that I'm going to try and make the ones I can this year?
Heck yeah.
Unfortunately, I always miss the
Go ahead.
So it always like conflicts, but that's just kind of where we are now with community organizing. Like, there's just tournaments on top of tournaments now, which is great. Yeah. It's a wealth of riches, so I'm not complaining about that. But
yeah, sometimes there's just only so many to go around, like so many weekends that is.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm wondering, would you say that's kind of the biggest improvement or like thing you learned from year one, like as far as spreading out that schedule to be a full year to kind of give the Midwest events a little more room to breathe and maximize planning time? Or was there anything else that you would say was a specific like improvement you wanted to hit on for year two?
Definitely spacing out the timing, knowing everybody who's kind of involved this year. Now I kind of know how they operate when they run their tournaments. You know, so I've got some people now where I've got kind of a consistent line with knowing how they want to do things when they do their stuff. And like, I know what to expect more. We had basically, while I was working on rushing the prize support together last year, I had a lot of time to think about what I wanted to do this year. Most of my prize support planning that kind of pulls the circuit together as a theme is already planned out. It's all being made right now. So it's like, I'm like way ahead of schedule as far as logistics compared to last year. Just knowing that there would be a second year gave me a lot more breathing room, essentially, to kind of plan things out with who, where, when, what, as far as details concerned. So it's been super helpful in prepping for doing this again.
Nice. Well, okay, I don't want to keep you on forever, but there is one other topic that I think is very pertinent to the Midwest circuit compared to any of the others, because NECT, the Northeast, is entirely joust events, right? And I believe so. That the West Coast is as well. I admit I tend to not follow the Road to Stalic events as closely because I know I'm not going to be able to attend them, but I believe they're also all joust. But the Midwest,
Road to Stalic, I actually think Thrones War is technically a West Coast event.
It is.
I think this last year. Yeah, I think it is.
Okay. I did not remember that it was. Okay, well, that bends the uniqueness angle that I was thinking about a little bit. But I think it probably still stands that the Midwest Circuit has a broader range of tournament formats and styles than the others, right? Because, like you said, yeah. Jesse's Name Day with the war style format is kicking things off. We're going to have first player at the end of May, which is one of the few tournaments these days to have both Joust and Melee. As you pointed out, the Minnesota guys always have a little bit of a different theme, and generally kind of don't they have some little special rules of some variety to their September events?
Yeah, they really push kind of price support themed, like fun deck building sort of things where they don't necessarily bind you to an alternate format, but like they will encourage people to build decks on themes where they'll be like last year they did Queen of the Andals, where if you were the first person each round to get a queen in play, you would yell Yas Queen, and then you would get like a special prize for that round. So they're always trying to push people to do kind of new things, which is kind of great.
That's
I would awesome. Definitely. Yeah, I would say like the big things that set us apart are we do have a lot more variety in our tournament styles. You know, Crassers is kind of it's joust, but it's kind of this more bracketed sort of round robin affair. You know, you push Melee in a way that most American tournaments do not. We might look at, you know, obviously we have a team event, and then the Ohio guys are kind of looking at trying to do maybe more of a triathlon thing.
Oh, nice.
Kind of like what Scarecrow started doing in Atlanta, where there's multiple formats. I definitely want to push draft this year in a way that really hasn't been pushed at all. We might still be looking at for Michigan or Ohio, because I really think draft's super underutilized as a format.
I agree.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and the other big thing that we push is, you know, which may not be popular in some parts of the world, but like I really push the in-deck alt arts with our prize support too, which some people can appreciate and some people don't. I know it's kind of a controversial topic at times, but I think one thing that is unique about going to Midwest circuits is like you get different kinds of alt arts, so you're not going to get anywhere else. You're not going to get house cards again. You know, you can only get so many house cards, you can only use so many house cards.
Yeah,
plots are great and all that, but sometimes, you know, if you want something different and if it's not your thing, that's okay. You know, last year we did like tokens and stuff too, and I'm always encouraging people in the circuit to come up with like cool prize ideas. So that's kind of another stamp of uniqueness you can look at when you're looking at Midwest events. And most Midwest events are like in bars as opposed to other circuit events. kind of has become sort of a trademark thing in the Midwest now. Half our tournaments seem like they're in bars at this point. So
I'm not sure what that says about us, but I'll take it and enjoy it anyway. Yeah, well, I mean, I personally hope that the variety of event styles in the Midwest is a draw for people, especially in the card gap we had, the drought lately. Our local players, I think, have become way more enthused about the game in the context of alternate play formats and tinkering around with Hand of the King again. And we've got this two-headed titan thing coming up, 2 weeks from now, and things like that. So I really hope for folks that want to get out there and try some tournaments, but they maybe get a little burnt out on the hardcore competitive joust grind. I mean, not that these Midwest events are not competitive, but I really hope that the change up in formats among them really kind of refreshes and gives everybody a new perspective and enjoyment compared to the usual grind.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I know, like, now that we're getting product again, some of our casuals are like super excited. The Barabox is super exciting for people. And actually, a lot of our more casual non-traveling players, at least around here, are really excited about these new kits. And they've been reaching out to me about coming up with like cool new formats for it. And I've already got like three lined up.
Awesome.
So I think that these new kits are definitely a great step in the right direction for getting people to kind of start playing regularly again. The product drought was definitely pretty harsh. The need for the restricted list was pretty harsh. And now that we've kind of gotten those things out of the way, it's a good time to try and get people in and maybe start getting them more traveling more, maybe getting to go to something a couple hours away. I know there's going to be a lot of new first timers coming to Jesse's, so that's a pretty good sign.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So if you're a newer player out there, definitely check these kinds of events out, because it's the best. It's showcasing the community at its best. Things like Jesse's Name Day, some of these more relaxed style events. It's a good way to play Thrones.
Heck yeah. Well, thanks for coming on with me for a little bit, Chris. I'm going to hopefully still give you enough time to eat some lunch. And we'll catch up with you again another time.
Awesome. You have a good one.
Okay, here we go with another segment of episode 375 of the White Book. This time, a little bit even more special, because we've bent time and space to make an interview happen with one of our European cohorts that we don't often match up with on the White Book. So it's always good to have that change of pace, I think, and remind people that this is a global game and community, and not just the U.S., as centric to that as we often are on the show. So I definitely wanted to welcome Remco on this week.
Thank you, Will. Hi, guys.
Well, the theme for this episode has been chatting with folks involved in the organization of player-run, organized play circuits for Game of Thrones, and really the elder statesman of that crowd, shall we say, is definitely the Road to Stalic. It is the first. And Remco has, in the past at least, been very well involved in that, though he tells me his involvement has dialed back a little bit lately. But I think maybe we can still get a little bit of a feel for how things came together. So how did it move from, just a lot of disconnected tournaments in Europe to something so organized?
Well, I think it started with the Battaglia Pura Moro. It was one of the biggest player run tournaments, of course, in Europe. But mm-hmm. you had like between 200 and 300 people the last few times they were active. But yeah, they started the whole thing. So Ioria and Ingrid were mostly the king and queen of the road to Starlink. And after a set time, the tournaments of France and Poland came and joined that. And I think after that, it was the UK with the Battle for Blackwater Bay. And yeah, well, after that, the ball started rolling a little bit more, and we now have one in Bulgaria, Sweden, Netherlands. We have France still. We have the Warsaw one, Fracas, and UK one. And of course, one of the new additions as well is the one in Scotland, Siege of Winterfell.
Yeah.
And that's only the ones in Europe at the moment.
Yeah, it has spread across the pond a couple times, hasn't it?
Yeah, true. Basically, what happened was Starlink itself was recognized as the unofficial European Championships for a while by FFG. And then they started, when SPD took over, they started their own European Championship. And basically, that's when we all said, so, yeah, we can go global now and make it our own brand. So then one of our fellow players from Asia came along to Starlink to talk to the Road of Starlink organizers and started his own, well, road, and has an awfully good circuit now in Asia running with their main event, the Siege of Marine, if I'm not mistaken, also being a Road to Starlink event. And we have, last year we had a Road to Starlink in the US as well. And this year again.
So, you know, I feel like I should have been keeping count while you were talking. How many Road to Starlink events are there now?
So we start off the year with Bulgaria, then France, Netherlands, UK, Warsaw, Varberg, Sweden, and then we top it off with Scotland. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in Europe, and then 2 or 3 in, well, outside of Europe. So let's keep it at 10. Nice round number.
Okay. Yeah, I think that is a good number. Well, that does give me one thought I want to follow up on, but there is a prior aspect that I want to touch on before that. I'm a little curious then. It feels like it's been an institution for so long that I do not even remember now when the Road to Starlink officially became a thing, when that name was really used and it became an organized entity. Do you recall how many years that's been now?
Well, to be honest, my first tournament ever was Starlink itself.
Okay.
Because we only had 3 or 4 players at that time in the Netherlands. And, well, I wanted to play in a small tournament, so let's go to Starlink.
Uh-huh.
And to be honest, that's also the first time that I came into contact, of course, with the Road to Starlink organizers, Ingrid, Ioria, and a few others. So my first Road to Starlink experience must have been in 2014, I think. And that's when the Road to Starlink already was started. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing it started somewhere in 2011 or 12.
Okay. That is a long time now.
Yeah.
You know, in the speed the gaming community moves, that is very well established.
Yeah, and of course, now the Road to Starlink in Spain, Batalla por Amor, doesn't exist anymore. Ayoria and Ingrid had, issues keeping it going, and they weren't as active anymore in playing as well. So they stopped organizing, but we still have a good few big tournaments coming up this year. The Fracas last year had, I think, over 200 players as well. They toned it down for this year to a maximum of, I think, 74 or 72. They are also undergoing like changes in the guys running it. So they're trying to reinvent themselves, I guess, and start off smaller again. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for Dockside, which was formerly known as Dockside Brothel Days, and now is just known as Dockside. And also had some changes in the people running it. But we try to keep it going.
I did not realize the name had officially just been shortened to Dockside now. Thought that was just a nickname because most people on the internet are lazy.
Yeah, true. Let's just say we wanted to make it a more friendly name.
That's understandable.
Yeah.
Well, thinking of friendliness, I am curious, what sort of factors would you say are some of the biggest contributions to what I think, we could call the wild success of the Road to Starlink events? Is it community friendliness? Is it swag? I'm always seeing pictures of some stunning alt arts. what goes into that magic?
Well, that's funny that you should ask, because last year at Euros, I had the same question asked to myself and a few others by one of the official organized play managers from Asmodee, the Netherlands.
Oh, wow.
He asked, what's the difference between the official tournament circuit that they're running versus the Road to Starlink? To be honest, I think people just know that the people that run these events put their heart and soul into this, and they will make sure you have a good time. And it's not just the tournament, of course. It's everything around it. What makes it like more of a family gathering, I guess, a big family that is. So, yes, of course, the swag does help. I mean, some of the old artwork that I've been seeing over the years is really awesome. And yeah, that is part of it. But I think that a tournament run by the community for the community is what makes this tick.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I could really kind of grasp that difference when you mentioned the organizers of these events pouring their heart and soul into it. It just creates a very different feel from the ground all the way up when you have someone deeply involved and passionate like that versus someone who it's just their job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys do spend a lot of their free time on making sure that the weekend their tournament is held is being run in a smooth way and everybody's happy. So, yeah. I think that really, really makes the difference.
Okay. Well, one other thought that I had tabled here for a moment, it has to do with the number of events, which you said we may be calling an even 10 at the moment. It also feels like the U.S. circuits have kind of settled on about an 8 to 10 event number as well. Do you feel that is kind of the prime point to hit at? Could you see it expanding more, or just trying to stay right about there?
Well, you have to take into account that for the Road to Starlight was in the beginning it was a European circuit, so we had to make sure that the events were not in each other's way as well. Mm-hmm. So basically what we had was one event each month starting from February till September, then have 1 month off for everybody to recharge their batteries, and then have Starlink itself. So basically we had like nine tournaments at that point, not including Starlink itself. Now we don't have that problem anymore if we're going to expand beyond the borders of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're asking me, can I see it expand even more? Yeah, why not? I mean, I think we can make like more room for players that won a semi to a big tournament, make them come to Starlink to compete.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm always saying. I mean, what I'm doing is, if someone comes to me and says, I want to do a Road to Starlink, I said, fine. We can talk about it, but I want the okay from every Road to Starlink organizer, from every tournament. So I will contact one of each organizers to tell them, okay, this is what has been asked. Do you think we can do that or not? And we'll have a slight vote and majority vote goes through.
Okay.
I think that's good, because that way you're keeping everybody in the Road to Starlink involved with a next edition as well. The last 2 years, I think we've been also talking about creating more unity between the Road to Starlink events. It still hasn't been finalized, but there is talk about it. So trying to make the price support and everything just be more unified with the other events. So we're trying to do everything to keep the momentum going.
Okay. So a little bit of you mentioned kind of unifying there, making sure there's a similar baseline of prizes offered, or trying to do something like, say, Chris Thompson's been doing with the Midwest Circuit, where all of the prizes kind of share a theme with each other. Like, he's working on this Great Swords of Westeros thing now, so that mm-hmm. everybody will offer something related to that.
Well, that's one of the things that we're talking about. The one thing I think all the organizers would like at least is to have the quality of prize support be the same for every tournament. And that means the quality of the cards being printed that you give away on registration or between rounds or whatever. But also the quality of playmats, art, etc. I'm guessing that we do have a name to uphold as well. So, yeah, everybody's working towards that goal. And yes, there has been talk about making like a theme for a certain year, and we all work with that theme to offer the prize support. But also there's been talk about working more closely together, about printing stuff, so we can order more quantity in at one point, so we might be able to offer more because we get discounts for it. So yeah, we're still talking about making it more of a well-oiled machine.
Awesome. I mean, as with anything, I think there's always room to find some kind of improvement.
Yeah, I think so.
Not that I'm saying you guys need the improvement, but I'm glad to hear that, you know, discussion is always ongoing about what to do next.
Yeah, and the same is with price support, of course, because, to be honest, especially the veterans of this game that have started with 2.0 or even before that. I mean, getting another playmat is also nice, but yeah, trying to reinvent like new ways to offer prices is also on the table. So yeah.
That is a perennial problem, or at least yep. Question.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a problem, and that's what we've been, I mean, the end of last year, me and James have been talking about it a lot, about trying to figure out a way to offer something instead of playmats, and we still haven't figured it out, so. Yeah, this year Darkside will have playmats again.
Well, if you come up with some more ideas, I will be very eager to see what they are.
Yeah, I guess me and James will be starting to brainstorm again right after Darkside's done, so we'll keep you in the loop.
Sounds good. Well, I know I promised that I would not keep you terribly long for this interview, and I think we're probably getting close to the end of that time, but I am curious if you have any parting thoughts about the Road to Stalik that you really want to make sure we hit on before we go.
Well, the only thing I want to say is the Road to Stalik should be visited. At least at one point, by anyone. And I'm guessing that a few of the Americans can already say yes to that, like Sandy and Aaron. If you ever get a chance from the States or wherever from outside of Europe, visit one of the Road to Stalics.
I think that's a great guideline. I'm hoping to one day manage it myself.
Yeah, or just win one of the American Road to Staliks and come to Stalik. That's also good.
Perfect. I like it. Now, if only they'd quit having them on weekends, I'm doing other things. I think, isn't KublaCon one this year?
Yep. KublaCon is one Road to Stalik this year. So,
unfortunately, they're the same weekend we're running the first player championship over here. I feel like the players coming to that might be a little disappointed if I'm on the other end of the country.
They might be. But yeah, who knows? Maybe you can do a like a video connection and share the tournaments.
There we go. I like that idea. All right. Well, thank you very much, sir, for working with me to coordinate schedules here many time zones away so that we could catch up for a bit.
Yeah, no problem. Always glad to have.
All right, guys, we've got another segment here on episode 375. This time, we are chatting with a gentleman I generally know as Sid, and most folks I know call him that, but I do feel like I should ask, do you normally go by that in, like, real life, or do you go by Lucas or Luke? What's up?
I did go by Luke in my youth. I think that fell out of practice around, I don't know, 11 or 12 years old. And since then, went by Lucas for a little while. My wife does, insist on calling me Lucas.
you can't convince her otherwise.
No. But, I will say professionally, I've been known as Sid, for the last 14 years at work. And before that, kind of in college, it was a pretty consistent nickname. And then kind of joining into the Thrones community, you know, everyone's got a little handle. Everyone's got a cool little nickname. So Sid just kind of fell into place. Both my students and my colleagues all call me Sid. So it felt like a natural little nickname to drop in, you know, while, you know, podcast hosting or popping into forums and having a username or, you know, being on Iron Throne or anywhere. So yeah, Sid kind of naturally evolved as a nickname I already had and got adopted over to Thrones. But people do still call me Lucas all the time. John Bruno will probably always call me Lucas. And he heard that I went by Luke because I think the person who first introduced me to Thrones was actually an early childhood friend who always called me Luke, and he was the only one. And Bruno was like, "Hey, do you go by Luke?" And I said, "No, I don't." But he heard this one person call me Luke, so he's called me Luke ever since.
So
and he's the only one I let get away with it.
You specifically told him no, and then kept doing it.
I do not go by that name.
Love
but
it.
if it's good enough for someone, it was good enough for Bruno. He likes to be unique, so he does call me Luke, but he's the only one.
Okay, well, that's something then. I'll stick with Sid for the duration of the conversation.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, for the sake of the community.
Yeah. Otherwise, they may get.
Right.
Well, we've got you on this week to chit chat a little bit about yet another of the player run and organized circuits that is kind of spreading across the United States now, kind of in homage to, I think you could say, the Road to Stalik. And
really?
First things first, I also wanted to ask about the naming of the Western Circuit, because I admit I'm shorthanding here. Each one has a slightly different naming convention. What is the official name of the Western part?
The official name is the Western Championship Circuit, or the WCC.
There we go.
And it would have been easy just to say, you know, the Western Circuit, but, you know, a two-letter acronym just doesn't quite sound right. You know, it feels like you got to shove three in there just to get a nice flow. So the WCC just kind of felt right, Western Championship Circuit. It is modeled pretty closely off of the NEC, though we kind of wanted to follow suit with our Northeastern brethren, just so, not that our circuits are connected in any way, but just so that there's kind of a consistent flow across the different circuits, you know, simple acronyms.
Yeah, totally makes sense to me. Yeah, so I guess that points me then a little bit toward how things got kicked off there. I know there things were kind of in the work for a while. Was your work there in the Western realm? In totally independent, kind of great minds think alike compared to the Northeast starting up? Or had you guys already kind of heard a rumbling of that? Because I feel like you announced not long after the Northeast, right?
It wasn't long after, yeah. We did kind of already have a network of tournaments in place. And in fact, all except for one of the tournaments of the WCC were actually all long-held tournaments in the West. So we were pretty fortunate to already have these wonderful community-run tournaments, kind of ranging from the small, localish level to pretty big and popular regional level. And we thought, well, look, NEC just kind of threw this – I shouldn't say just threw this together. Roy and his helpers put a ton of work into kind of creating a lot of their tournaments from the ground up. We were super fortunate to kind of already have the infrastructure in place. So we just thought, wow, you know, if they can do it with all that work, we should be able to do it with very little work, because, you know, we had seven of the eight tournaments already established. Now, once we finally well, once I kind of thought, well, let's bring these, you know, disparate tournaments together and bring these folks together, of course it got complicated, because then you couldn't just, you know, pick your tournament whatever weekend you wanted. There had to be some thought into it, and we had to get everybody around the table to say, okay, I know you usually hold your tournament, you know, in this month, but we have three tournaments in that month. Could you, you know, go plus or minus a month? And people were really, really open to that kind of shifting. But yeah, for the most part, we were inspired by what the Northeast did, and were able to react so quickly and get ours up and running, just because we have a great community out here in the West, and people were already doing the legwork. You know, it was just about connecting folks.
Yeah. So when you are kind of dealing with those established tournaments, then it does seem like it might be difficult to get everybody on the same page and make it actually really feel connected and part of an actual circuit. So how are you guys kind of tackling making something consistent? Are you doing that through prizes or structure, or what's the tissue there?
Yeah, I would say the main tissue is kind of the prizes, because we do have a special series of house cards that we commissioned from a wonderful artist up in Northern California that one of our TOs helped hook us up with, and it's kind of the Weapons of Westeros series. And since we're most of the way through the series, I think we only have two stops left. Most of those have kind of come out and been revealed, and they were revealed back at the beginning of the circuit as well. And also the main prize, though, that I think links it all together and helps so much is the prize of getting the buy at Kublai Khan. And Kublai Khan really is the glue that holds it together. Most of the people who attend these circuit events, the seven events along the circuit, were attending Kublai Khan already. And this was a way to help promote events in their region, to say, hey, you know that tournament you love to go to, Kublai Khan? Well, come to this tournament, you know, months before, you can earn yourself this buy. And Kublai Khan has a lot of gravity. It has a lot of pull out here on the West Coast. It's been around so long. Whenever we get new players into the game, you know, if they're kind of getting along with the structure of it, and they enjoy coming out to game nights, the big tool for getting them to really get invested is, hey, come to Kublai Khan. It'll be, you know, your best experience by far, because you're going to meet the entire Western community. We all show up for it. Northern California, Southern California, Vegas, up to Washington and Oregon. You know, everyone kind of descends on the Bay Area over Memorial Day weekend. And incorporating that into the circuit structure, I think, was really key to making everyone feel like they were part of the family, because the Kublai family is pretty special and it goes back quite a long ways. In terms of structure, though, we didn't want to have an exactly consistent tournament structure. We really wanted to give TOs the ability to kind of autonomously run the tournaments they've been running. You know, we put a lot of trust into these community TOs, and we want them to run their tournaments a little differently. Now, that didn't pan out this year. All our tournaments are really just standard joust tournaments. No one, you know, went rookery or anything. although they could have. I encourage them that you know, if you want to do a different format, as long as you know, keep the integrity of the tournament and you follow your own rules and everyone understands it beforehand, feel free. We don't want to kind of keep things too structured, but everyone out here kind of likes joust. It's kind of their thing. So it worked out consistent wise that way, but I was kind of hoping someone would go rogue and, you know, do a rookery format, but no one did.
Maybe next time. I'm sure it'll be hard on the planning for that before long.
Definitely.
So let's see here. What else? I feel like, you know, compared to interviews I've had with other folks about the other circuits, like, you've been so much more like concise and still covered more ground. I was covering a lot of questions that like you've already kind of tackled, which, I mean, is both good and bad, right?
Okay, the nature of my profession, it's mostly, you know, teaching's mostly performance. So when someone asks you a question, you just kind of try and give every bit of information. But I did want to mention something, and that is our eighth tournament, because, you know, we had these seven tournaments already in place, and that includes KubaCon for the culmination. But you know what? There's eight factions in the game. So the idea was, you know, you get one of these special house cards, and then if you go to all the tournaments, you collect all eight. But with only seven tournaments, it was like, it's not the right number. So we needed that eight tournament. And we looked to LA as a spot. You know, I just called up their typical organizers. Like, I think I messaged Stephen Ebrey and Neil Kimball. First, because they're kind of real pillars of the community down there in LA. They've been playing the game for a long time, especially Neil. And I said, hey, guys, there's no tournaments in Los Angeles. You know, San Diego's got two with Thrones War and Kingdom Con. But there's nothing really in LA. And LA Thrones really has come into its own these last few years as a meta that is both kind of a part of SoCal Thrones, but also distinctive from SoCal Thrones. And I really encouraged them to run something, and they totally did. Stephen Ebrey kind of took up the mantle and got it all organized in just a couple months' time. And we had something like 34, 35 people, and they had to be the first tournament on the circuit also, because that's where we had the open space in the schedule. And he just kind of stepped up and made the whole circuit really kick off nicely. We had people from San Diego come. Of course, all of LA showed up. A big couple car loads and a big group from Northern California came down. And it was just a great feeling to see this thing kind of come together with our newbies. And then all the kind of established tournaments have really just held it down. One of our tournaments, actually, the Battle of Bravos, which is run by AJ Klein up in Mountain View, California. He had already run Battle of Bravos in February. But our circuit starts in the summertime. And I was like, AJ, you know, February is kind of packed because, you know, we just had Thrones War in February. I said, is there any way you could move? And he actually moved his tournament to October of last year and had two Battle of Bravos in 1 year. And I mean, you know how about it as well. It's a lot of work to put together a big tournament like this. And he had amazing prize support. He had unique playmats. He had commissioned artwork. He had purchased stuff. And he had this amazing prize pool twice in 1 year for Battle of Bravos once in February, once in October. We loved it because, you know, you can't get enough of these tournaments. But I think we burnt poor AJ out having to do that twice in
that's,
1 year.
That's killer. That's killer.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, especially cool. Working up prizes twice in a year, you know? Like.
Yeah, I mean, I only run one tournament a year at KubaCon, and it's stressful enough, so.
Yeah. Well, speaking of actually prizes and tournaments here, does point me towards something I have kind of discussed with some of the other guys, and you kind of hit on a little bit there with the number of tournaments, right? Eight factions, right. Eight tournaments, and how that kind of lines up nicely for house-themed prizes. Do you pretty well feel then that is the number that the Western Championship Circuit should stick to, or now with some more under your belt, do you think you guys will look at trying to push it a little larger, look at cutting a little, you know, how's the feel there?
That's a great question. So originally we were even talking closely with Dustin Archer, who's works out of Houston and has a meta kind of in Houston. And we were looking to incorporate him somehow. Now, even though that's pretty far, you know, east of west, we still kind of, you know, it's kind of southwest plus, you know, if you go out there. But it was an area that wasn't really captured by any of the other metas or circuits. So we thought maybe we could include him there. And because of some logistical stuff, he couldn't pop in. But in that case, it was then going to be like the eight tournaments plus Kubla. So you'd have still kind of the eight prizes, and then Kubla would be unique stuff. So losing out on kind of Houston's participation didn't hurt so much there. I felt like eight total was kind of the minimum. Would I ever go more? I think it's hard to go more than that. not because of the it matches the number of faction cards. It does fit nicely with prizes. But once you get up to like 10, 11, I think you can overload your circuit. I don't know if you really want to have more than one tournament a month. If you do, you might be kind of cannibalizing your own group of players, especially if it's taking place during regular Game of Thrones tournament seasons, like store championship season or regional season. And then you also have to take into account, like, you know, it's hard to get people to all commit and go to a tournament, you know, in late December. There's kind of a natural lull after Worlds. So we have a little break in ours from October to January. We take those 2 months off on the circuit, partly because no one really wanted to run a tournament in November and December, and partly because of Worlds. You know, people are getting
ready. And yet you guys have the nicest weather to actually have something out there.
I know, you're right. You're not wrong. I think I actually encouraged AJ quite a bit to try and tackle November or December, if only just to give him a little more space between the tournaments that he had to run. But he was happy to do it kind of in October, at the end of October. So once you start getting up to 10, you know, you're going to be really buttoned up against each other, I think, in dates on these things. And that makes them feel maybe a little less unique, a little less special. If a circuit events every 3 to 4 weeks on the nose, it maybe loses a little bit of its luster. At 8, you know, you've got a couple months between a few of them, but a few of them you get lucky and you can kind of go back to back months. I think that's kind of a sweet spot. The other real logistical thing is, you know, the West is such a big area. You know, we can say, all right, we got a tournament in San Diego and a tournament in Portland, but that is a lot of mileage between those locations. So kind of planning out so you're not putting back-to-back tournaments, you know, in say Portland and San Diego is good. We did have that occurrence this year, and I think attendance fell a little bit in our Portland tournament, maybe for a lot of reasons. I'd have to talk to Brett, and I haven't talked to him real closely to see exactly why I think numbers were lower this year. I think it's possible. It's so far up there in Portland, and it's kind of sandwiched between the two big tournaments in San Diego, between Thrones of War and then Kingdom Con, which is coming up this weekend on the 13th. It kind of suffered for the timing and the mileage between. So I think next year we'll see if we can adjust that a little bit so people have a little bit more time to kind of plan and get up to Portland. He got the local players, but fewer traveled this year. And I think we could have done a better job of maybe placing that one on the calendar. But when you have, you know, more than 8, it becomes harder and harder to kind of make those placement choices. So I'd be reticent to go more than 8. Organizing 8 people was enough, I think. If it was more than that, it might be more of a headache rather than just kind of the fun that it is right now. And so, yeah, there's my answer for that. I'd love to see more tournaments, but sometimes I feel like we can kind of hit a real threshold in terms of what people are willing to participate in. That sounds crazy because, you know, more tournaments, the better, but I don't think it's always true. I think you need a nice mix of big community tournaments or a nice gap between them to really enjoy them.
Yeah, agreed. There's definitely a point, you know, where there's just so much conflict that the potential fatigue makes it so much easier to you know, do something else and take a break for a minute.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I know you said you didn't have a long time here, and we're even a couple minutes past what I was thinking. Any parting thoughts that you're just itching to get off your chest about the Western Circuit, or shall I just thank you for your time?
Nothing big. Just I really encourage people. There's only one left on the circuit. That's Kingdom Con, and it's, you know, 2 days from this recording. So people, if you're going, you're probably are going to be there. But I know there's other tournaments going on, including your first player championship on Memorial Day weekend. But I really encourage people to come out to Kubla if they can, especially if they are listeners on the West Coast and they're kind of thinking about diving in deeper to this community. I think there's no better place to really kind of cement your place with everybody and have a good time. So I would encourage people to come to Kubla and also just keep your eyes out for post-May announcements about the second season of the WCC. It should be even bigger and better than the first, and I'm excited to see it go into the future.
Yeah, I'm very curious and excited to see what happens next now that everybody's kind of getting their feet under them, so to speak.
Yeah, I think the circuits are really coming into their own. Hopefully the game sticks around long enough for them to mature.
Fingers crossed. Props and slops.
Go ahead, Will. What's your prop?
Well, you know, I actually am going to start with a slop this time.
Ooh.
I know.
Unlike you, Will.
I meant to actually slop it last week, and I goofed on it. And this is going to be a twofold prop, slop. Gosh. So the first one is going to be, and I think I've ranted about this on the show in the past, that any time like Missouri and like the Ozarks in general is represented in popular media, it's always for something, you know, fairly terrible, negative, you know, drug use, that sort of thing. Winter's Bone, Three Billboards.
You've been watching the Ozarks?
Ozarks on Netflix with Jason Bateman. Yeah. All of that sort of thing. I mean, well, they can be good in their own right. It is a little depressing that we are only ever represented in these negative situations. So, of course, now I'm sure many of our listeners have checked out The Act on Hulu.
Act? I have not even heard of
it. Oh, it is a docudrama. About a woman and daughter who moved to Springfield, Missouri, I live. And did some pretty insane, twisted stuff. Spoiler alert for anybody that wants to avoid things that were in the news a few years ago. The short version...
Life's a spoiler, Will.
Yeah.
Life's a spoiler.
The short version is that the mother... basically kind of like brainwashed the girl into believing that she was like terribly sick with all this stuff.
Oh, I remember. I mean, I remember this story.
Yeah. And then milked it for donations and a free Habitat for Humanity house and just all sorts of stuff. Yeah. And the girl basically eventually kind of snapped and like convinced her boyfriend to murder her mom. And it was this whole big twisted thing. So, part one of the slop is that here we go again, Missouri. This time, the town I live in specifically represented as a hellhole yet again.
Fair that you feel that way.
The second part of the slop is that they also did a really terrible job of recreating Springfield, Missouri on the show. I'm sure for other people that live in other cities, like say anything that claims to be in New York or LA or whatever and was really filmed in Vancouver, I'm sure that drives those people crazy. So I finally now feel that pain where they're showing buildings that look about, I don't know, 359 degrees off. Almost a full loop the other direction from what's actually here. And everyone has an accent that I think I can really only quantify as East Texas.
The Ozarks is practically East Texas, right?
We're like Texas light. Maybe even three lights, you know, because Oklahoma is definitely Texas light. And we're still even further away than that. So, there we go. Those are my slops.
Well, I'm also an incredible, like, bigot when it comes to, like, Washington, D.C. In like, popular culture. Like, I tend to be like, that's nothing like D.C. That like, you know, I was recently with my fiancé watching Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And you can definitely tell the sequences that are filmed in D.C. and not filmed in D.C. you know, like the whole Nick Fury chase, like those don't look like the DC roads. Mm-hmm. That's not what DC's like. Or most infamously, if you've ever watched the fourth Die Hard movie, right? That's the one with Kevin Smith.
Oh, wow.
Right? Is that the fourth one?
Ooh, I'm not sure.
Because it's Die Hard 3 is Die Hard with a Vengeance with Sam Jackson, right? It's whatever the one that – the first one with Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Bruce Willis's daughter from the second one. Anyway, I know way more about the Die Hard franchise than I really like care to admit or really care about.
Yeah,
but anyway,
out of the loop here.
There's a skyscraper sequence where he – jumps out of a skyscraper to escape whatever he's fighting at that time. Of course, anyone who knows anything about DC knows that there are no skyscrapers in Washington. So it's stuff like that, or like Bones, the television show Bones, is also pretty notorious from this. And my poor fiance, when we were watching Bones, had to put up with me constantly complaining about it being absolutely nothing like DC, or when they're like, oh, when they get it right, I also am willing to call them to give them credit. So
okay, well, good. At least you're even-handed like that, right?
Yeah, you know.
Well done. Dang. It may your comments there made me think of something right in the middle of it, and now probably thanks to the beer I'm drinking, I've completely forgotten it. Oh well.
Can't help you there, my friend.
Oh, nope. I got it. I'm gonna prop something that I'm very certain I propped before. Also, spoiler alerts for S.H.I.E.L.D. like two seasons ago. You bringing up Winter Soldier again just made me think, you know what? I want to prop S.H.I.E.L.D. for having the chutzpah to recreate at least part of a set from Winter Soldier during their framework escapades. So that was pretty sweet the first time I saw that.
Okay. I haven't watched Winter Soldier since the OG, the first season when I gave up on it. So
S.H.I.E.L.D.?
S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah.
Yeah. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah. I mean, it gets way better. If you don't mind very minor spoilers, do you mind minor spoilers?
I don't. I live a spoiler open life.
Okay.
I spent much of today after the new Endgame trailer coming out, looking at the Marvel Studios spoilers Reddit. So I love spoilers. So
okay, well, the condensed version is basically we get a what if style arc, right? Which is basically what if Hydra won.
Oh right, yeah. That's that they go to like they're in a computer or something, right?
Yeah. They're in a computer. They're in the Matrix, basically.
Yeah.
But there is definitely a scene which is like the cliffhanger end to the episode that is, you know, setting all this up, where Agent May is riding an elevator. Like, she kind of walks through part of an office or whatever and gets on this elevator, and like the camera zooms out and you realize it's the elevator from the you know, kind of iconic at this point Cap fight scene in Winter Soldier.
That's cute.
Yeah, which I thought was pretty cool. That kind of blew my mind a little bit, you know, for all the issues there are trying to integrate the shows and the movies. Now I thought that was well done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I love that kind of call out stuff. Prop, since we're on Marvel stuff, I recently rewatched a bunch of random MCU movies, when I was ill. And, yeah, still good.
Good. I'm going to try and convince Kristen to rewatch something tonight. Maybe Ant-Man and the Wasp.
That one's a very fun movie.
Mm-hmm.
So
the Ant-Man movie surprised me. I was really kind of blah on the first one. I put off watching it until it'd been out on video at least 6 months. I put it off for a long time. And then it turned out to really like it when I finally said it.
I mean, there's a lot of charm to those. There's a lot of charm.
Yeah. Turns out, I mean, Paul Rudd is just a really, really charming guy in a very down-to-earth sort of way. So.
Absolutely. He really sells a really kind of no one is ever like, Ant-Man is the greatest character of all time. I mean, I'm sure there are some people who say Ant-Man is the greatest character of all time, but those people are few and far between. And Paul Rudd brings some real, you can really get behind his character as played by Sam Rudd. So, not Sam Rudd. Oh my God.
Paul Rudd.
There we go. Why did I say Sam Rudd? I don't know.
Are you imbibing while you podcast as well, Roy?
I am imbibing while I podcast as well. I've had a very long day at work. I can slop long days at work. So
there you go. That's a good one.
So, you know, having to talk about work on a public podcast, what does it put you in, Will?
Ooh, if you actually talked about it, that would be the danger zone for sure.
It would be. It would close a chapter, not just on the white book, but on
but
my
maybe
career.
Your employment.
My employment and my career.
Thank you.